This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
When we left the air in the last hour, we were really starting to get fascinated by the landing of the astronauts from the International Space Station. After being stranded for months, they splashed down into the ocean. And let's dip into this a little bit. This is Fox is actually covering NASA TV. So it's the NASA TV, and I think Brett Baer might be talking here a little bit. Let's find out.
A bunch of different scientific research that was done on Mark and I. And, most of the results were as they kind of.
I think they're talking with his guest right now. I was hoping that we were going to get play by play, but I think we might have missed that, Sue, at the top of the hour, because it was still coming down with the parachutes when we broke, and then it splashes down into the ocean, and all of a sudden, like three different boats start racing toward it. They were probably tracking it in the sky. They knew a general area, but to your point, that's a vast, vast area in the ocean that they had to go rescue this crew from. But what do you think they feel right now, finally being down after Joe Biden left them stranded up there?
I mean, and that poor woman, and maybe she doesn't care and it's just me projecting, but if I had to be on TV with my hair straight up for 9 months.
Yeah,
and they were only supposed to be up there for a brief amount of time. Nobody was prepared. I mean, the gall of him to leave them there for political reasons.
It really is quite
shocking.
Something. And you can't really describe it any way except for that, because that's exactly what happened. Hey, our friend David Strom from hotair.com is back with us on this Tuesday evening. How are you, Mr. Strom?
I'm here with a sunny disposition in honor of Sonny, who just came back.
How about that? I mean, can you even imagine being stuck up there because the other president didn't want you to come down because it might look good for the other guy?
Well, I can imagine it from Joe Biden and his indifference to everybody else. I mean, you know, most people don't know this. I mean, they weren't just up there for, you know, I think it was 7 to 10 days was what they were scheduled. They went up with no luggage, no supplies.
Yep.
It's just remarkable. I mean, obviously, the space station has things like, enough food and water. But it's not a hotel, so they didn't have toothbrushes, toothpaste, changes of underwear, changes of clothes, any of that until the next supply ship went up. And that was entirely due to Joe Biden, who didn't want Elon Musk to look good.
How do you, I guess you can't really do laundry on the space station, right? You just have to go to the next pair of underwear or whatever you might have available. I didn't really think about
that.
Yeah. I'm not
That's
sure
a
either.
Good question. I know everything is tougher up there. I mean, you're right. I don't think doing laundry is an easy task up there. And I think people get, and showers are very difficult, washing yourself. You don't have a shower. You have to give yourself a sponge bath or, you know, find a pretty nurse to do it for you, which is pretty difficult up there.
That might be a little tough up there, yeah.
You guys, the internet says they don't do laundry in space. They wear clothes till they're too dirty or smelly and then discard them. And then they're sent back to Earth with other waste.
And, you know, I know that they train for situations that are along the lines of psychological challenges. But let's face it, you go up there, I don't care how well you're trained, you think you're coming back down within a few days, and then you're stuck up there for months. That's got to get to you a little bit,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Well, and more than that, actually, you know, Mitch, was it Mitch or Mark? I forget his name. His daughter actually posted on Instagram, and most people hadn't noticed it, but this was a few weeks ago, how much it has hurt her. You know, he missed her sports meetings, her birthday, you know, and she's just a teenager, and she was very upset about this. And again, nobody in the administration cared. I mean, it was 100% about making Trump and Elon Musk look bad. I mean, Elon had you know, offered a rocket, offered to take them off. Butch had said, oh, yeah, no, he did. And, you know, so there's no dispute about what was offered.
No, there's not. When I was watching this, Sue, remember this a couple weeks ago, we were watching the interview, and I swear to God, I thought it was almost a setup where the astronaut was going to say, well, that didn't really happen. But he said the opposite.
Yeah.
Yep, that's exactly what happened.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it really is appalling. But then we're talking about, you know, a president or former president or a pudding brained guy or whatever you want to call him, who has always been calculating and nasty and stupid. I mean, the image that was created of Joe Biden by the Pravda media had nothing to do with who he really was. And now you've got, you know, reporters out there just, you know, Chuck Todd talked about what an awful man Joe Biden was.
Yeah, now
and
he says it. Now that
now
he's off of NBC and Meet the Press, he can admit to everybody what he knew for the longest time. Now, on the topic of media, David Strom, let's get into that. I opened the show talking about one of your columns. We're going to talk about Tulsi Gabbard and the AP because I think that's an important story.
Yep.
But did you notice, this was CBS last night in their lead to the news.
On this St. Patrick's Day, as millions of Americans celebrate their Irish heritage, recent events remind us that the Irish were among the first immigrants to be targeted in deportation crackdowns.
In the mid-1800s, New York and Massachusetts enforced policies to have Irish immigrants rounded up and deported.
I don't think I need to play any more than that. That gives you the flavor. That's how they started their newscast on St. Patrick's Day, with going back to the 1880s, making an analogy that really has no connection to what's happening today with migrants who are here that are murderers, criminals, dragging fentanyl in. We've made it very clear that we're not talking about everyone who comes across the border. But let's face it, it's a significant issue and it's an invasion. And they want to act like it's just like the 1880s with the Irish, Dave.
Oh, well, I mean, the media, you know, long ago gave up any pretense to being anything other than a propaganda outlet. And, you know, what's remarkable to me, I get these emails from, you know, my liberal friends and family, and they're sending me stories that come from the media. And, you know, they still believe this. And we're talking about, you know, Harvard grads. We're talking about academics.
Otherwise smart people, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I've given up asking them why they believe this, you know, because, you know, how many times can you be lied to and go back to, you know, they're like battered wives, you know, they keep.
And well, and, you know, you don't, what I would say to them is you don't have to believe a conservative talk show host or a conservative writer at hotair.com. Just Google Uri Berliner from NPR and read what he yeah. had to say a year ago.
Oh, and, you know, look up, you know, what was this, 10 or more years ago in The Atlantic, there was this story, another trash publication now, there was this story from an AP reporter who was based in Gaza, I believe, who revealed that the Associated Press shared offices with Hamas. And, you know, there's just, you know, these people are so corrupt now, and that's why they left the Associated Press. They just couldn't take it anymore. I'm sharing offices with terrorists. You know, they're propagandists.
Talk about the calm today, because this is yeah. important, because what they did, and you put this into great perspective, because we explained this to the audience, and we've tried to do this because the AP has been in the news. But the AP, this is a bigger story than just one news organization, because they distribute content all over the planet. And they write about a situation with Tulsi Gabbard and Putin and Trump, right? What happened here, David?
Yeah, well, first I'll tell you what happened, and you're right. I really would like to talk about why it's so important. The Associated Press wrote a story claiming that Tulsi Gabbard said that Trump and Putin were very good friends. That was their headline. And, you know, the whole thrust of this was to add to the, you know, Russia, Russia, Russia narrative that Trump is a Putin puppet. I mean, we've heard it all for a decade.
Right.
Then after it's sitting out there for a few hours, gets distributed to thousands of news outlets, was probably broadcast on thousands of newscasts. On radio stations, gets into the TV because it's just reported as news because they got it from the AP, which feeds news to everybody. I'm sure you have an AP feed there.
Of course, yeah. KMOX does down the hall, CNN does, Fox does. Everybody is pretty much forced to subscribe to the AP to get a lot of their content.
Yes, because, you know, as much as you think all these news outlets are out there doing their own news, that's not the case. You can only focus on a very small number of things. And so if you're going to cover issues nationally or internationally or just what's happening in Kansas City over there, you don't have a reporter there. You go to the AP and they tell you what's happening.
And in this case, they told you what was happening, but they lied about it.
They lied about it. In fact, it was about the Indian Prime Minister Modi is a good friend of Trump. Well, that's a big difference. You know, it's not even remotely close. But here we are in the midst of, you know, ceasefire negotiations. The Democrats are pushing the Russia stuff again. Everybody in the media is pushing it. And this is just one more data point that buttresses a completely false narrative.
Absolutely. Because what happens is they blast it out. It gets distributed everywhere. Newspapers run it. They put it on their websites. Broadcasters probably put it in newscasts. And then last night at 10:42, they come out with this. The Associated Press has withdrawn its story about U.S. Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard saying President Donald Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin are very good friends. Gabbard was talking about Trump and Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi. The AP will publish a corrected version of the story. Well, it's pretty much too late because all the stories are already out there, and you're not going to be able to, if they correct the story, that doesn't mean that everyone else that pushed out the content has a correction. It's still lingering out there.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what corrections are like. The fact is that there's no news outlet that likes printing corrections. When they do print corrections, they're in small print. It's not like every TV station is going to blare out, "Hey, we lied to you, but it's someone else's fault." So it's just going to be hanging out there. It has already been broadcast to everyone. It is pure Pravda propaganda. That's all it is. And, it goes deeper than that, because the AP controls at most news outlets what language is used.
Right. They have the workplace. So, right. We've talked about this. They have a style guide, and you are pretty much, they would say it's encouraged, but you're pretty much mandated if you work in a newsroom in this country to go by the AP style guide. And they love, you know, I don't know that they use Latinx like the LA Times, but they come very close.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you wonder why did they say, you know, a woman firebombed a Tesla place instead of, you know, a man who it was, you know, the answer is that's in the AP style book. And, this is really what the fight with the Associated Press is about up at the White House. When people think that it's just about the name of the Gulf of Mexico or the Gulf of America, that is just the tip of the iceberg. It really is about the AP shaping the news by shaping the language and the terms that are used. You know, instead of saying terrorist, you say freedom fighter.
Right.
You know, you start going down the list, and suddenly you see it's all about shaping a narrative. And the AP is just fundamentally corrupt, even if many of the reporters don't want to do it that way. But these are the rules.
Yeah, they're the worst. There's no doubt about it, which is why, you know, that is an important story because it affects so many different outlets. Now, David Strom from HotAir.com is here. I really haven't spent a ton of time in the last week about the anniversary, the five-year anniversary of COVID, but I do think it's important to revisit a lot. And I know that you wrote about this. There's a book out that shows how much we screwed up. Now we pretty much know the lab leak theory that was just completely discounted. In fact, David, when you wrote about this on HotAir.com, there was a link to the New York Times piece that says Senator Tom Cotton repeats fringe theories of coronavirus origins. Scientists have dismissed suggestions that Chinese government was behind the outbreak, but it's kind of a tale that gains traction among those who see China as a threat. Except 5 years later, that's pretty much what happened. It was not a wet market. It was created in a lab. It got out. Now we know that Fauci lied. They all lied. And it's too late because we've screwed up these kids forever and messed up the economy. So there you go. Congratulations,
oh, yeah. Well,
America.
The New York Times, the chief reporter for COVID, called it a racist conspiracy theory. And, you know, she tweeted out that someday we're going to look back on this and finally admit that this was only about racism. And then 5 years later, the New York Times is printing, well, we were lied to. It's like, no, you weren't. You knew. I knew. I mean, I knew in May 2020. And there has been this accumulation of evidence up to and including the fact that six intelligence agencies concluded, you know, including the Germans, the Japanese, the UK, all of their leaders were informed by their intelligence communities that it came from a lab. And not just that, but that it was engineered. And so there was a worldwide cover-up, and that cover-up included the mainstream media. You know, there is, I mean, all of these big news organizations have deep ties into the intelligence community. You see the leaks all the time. You know, they pick and choose what they want to tell you, but they're very deeply connected. And it was already known back in 2020, 2021, that Fauci had gone to the CIA and they had concluded it came from a lab, and he convinced them to say otherwise. So none of this, to anyone who is, you know, has been following this story for a long period of time, is surprised by this. But all the media folks are pretending to be surprised. Oh my gosh, we were lied to.
I like,
no, you weren't.
John Stewart was really good on this, and he said, and he was pretty early in on, yeah, you know, some of this is common sense. Like, oh my God, there's been an outbreak of chocolatey goodness near Hershey, Pennsylvania. What do you think happened? Right? What was it? Same thing. The novel respiratory coronavirus overtaking Wuhan, China. What do we do? Well, we could ask the Wuhan novel respiratory coronavirus lab. Maybe that's where we should start, right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it was so obvious. And again, by 2021, we had documents of how the EcoHealth Alliance, the people who they directly funded it, we gave them the money. And probably the Brits did as well. You know, USAID gave them money. And we have documents of grant applications where they described the creation of COVID. They didn't call it COVID, but they described exactly what they were going to do and, you know, what the goal was. And, you know, everybody in the establishment just looked at that and said, well, that's a coincidence. It's like, no, it's not. I mean, you know, quit BSing us. But it's not until the New York Times prints it that any of my liberal friends believe it. And then they say, well, it was with good intentions. It's like, no, it's not. You know, the reason why they did this is very clear. The government funded it. Nobody, no bureaucrat wants to come out and say, hey, I just killed 25 million people. So they hid it. I mean, it was pure CYA, and that's all it ever was. They funded it. They knew it was wrong at the time. The funding under Obama, all right? So Obama banned it. And then what happened was when the Trump administration came in, they were, you know, getting up to speed those first few months. And during that time, Fauci turned the government funding back on and, you know, it created COVID. And Wuhan, by the way, is doing this another time. They're working on other viruses in unsafe conditions. So don't be surprised if we see the same thing all over again.
Look, this, I still think the aftermath, all this cover-up stuff has been so undercovered by the legacy media. The New York Times actually had a pretty good piece in the other day about how we were misled. There's a new book out that pretty much puts this into great perspective as well. But let's face it, you know, in the piece that Zeynep Tufekci wrote in the New York Times talking about some of this, let's not forget you had, she points out, you had no fewer than 77 Nobel laureates and 31 scientific societies that were lined up to, you know, basically defend that Institute of Virology. And essentially, that's not where it came from. This is why I go on my rants all the time about the experts, because my goodness, do the experts get it wrong? 77 Nobel laureates were that dumb.
Yeah, well, 97% of scientists agree with the people who give them money.
Yes, I agree with that.
You know, I come from a family of scientists. I mean, both my parents were physicists. But I wrote about, you know, a high energy particle physics advisory board under the Biden administration put a gender studies professor onto the funding committee. You know, and she's talking about Einstein proofs that all morality is relative, right. And, you know, science is a white male thing. And these are the people who are distributing money for physics. And if it's in physics, particle physics, you know, we're talking about, you know, things that are so technical and so expensive, by the way. I mean, the most expensive science in the world, other than putting up space telescopes, is building the superconducting super colliders out there. You're talking about billions and billions of dollars, and you've got a gender studies alphabet ideology person funding it. And do you think that if someone is trying to get a grant for $1.5 billion, they're not going to bow down to that?
Of course they are. Look, my friend John Seiler, who's been great, he writes at the City Journal, David, and he has been one of the people, really the champions and the heroes, investigating and uncovering some of this DEI stuff. He's got a great story in City Journal. He's going to join me tomorrow night. How a lot of this, they're you know, with the DEI bans and the things that have happened, they're coming up with very creative ways to skirt the DEI bans and some of the stuff that they're doing. And again, it all is identity politics. It's not favoring people who are experts in science or the best and the brightest in science. It's all about diversity, equity, and inclusion. And they're trying to get around some of the stuff that the Trump administration is doing, and it's really disgusting. But John's done a great job of highlighting that and exposing it. David Strom, always great to have you on. I appreciate it here on a Tuesday evening. We'll talk soon. Thank you so much.
All right.
Chris Gervino with a preview of the Mizzou Tigers against Drake coming up. He's a member of the Mizzou Broadcast Network. We'll probably have audio cut of the day coming up as well. Yep, we're geared up for our second stop at Assumption this weekend. Then we head to Queen of All Saints the following week, St. Mary Magdalene in Brentwood on the 4th of April, and on the 11th, Ott's Tavern in Millstadt, Illinois. We have Brian Kilmeade coming this weekend. He may be on the show tomorrow. Ethan is still working that out either tomorrow or Thursday. Brian will be with us Saturday night. Tickets available at the Factory. You can also go to briankilmeade.com, get VIP tickets if you're interested in those. That will include like a meet and greet, and you get to get a copy of his book that's signed as well. Big basketball week. In fact, March Madness gets kicked off tonight with these play-in games tonight and tomorrow. And then Mizzou plays on Thursday evening. It's a primetime game. Oh, the astronauts
are out.
I'm
sorry. I actually gasped. Wait a second.
We may need to, let's see if we can dive into this here because we've been chronicling this. So hold the Mizzou thoughts for now. They splash landed not too long ago. The capsule is being opened up right now, and we're hoping that the astronauts are inside.
It's open for the first time since September.
Wow.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new unrivaled league, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You have SpaceX crew members that are opening the hatch and then kind of crawling into the capsule right now.
We can see some of the protective equipment there that was brought into frame that will help protect the edge of the side hatch, one, from any potential damage. Oh, we can see the recovery crew member there taking photos of the side hatch seal. This is part of the standard operation for recovery. These photos will get saved into our procedure.
This is all being broadcast on NASA TV.
Protective frame around the side hatch. This helps to ensure that the side hatch itself, the edges of it, incur no damage while crew members are coming out from the spacecraft.
And this landed, say it landed about an hour ago, Sue?
Yeah, maybe even. Yeah, that's probably right.
If you missed it, there was also a recovery team member that went inside. So there are now 5 people on board the Dragon spacecraft.
Wouldn't you want to just get unbuckled real quick and get the heck out of there?
Can you imagine how buckled in they are?
I know, they must be. And it was what? It was like 17-hour return trip, right? Do you sleep during that?
Man,
what do you do?
I don't think so.
I don't know if you
could.
And
if you are just joining us, it has not yet even been an hour since Crew 9 splashed down.
Go.
The coast of Tallahassee, Florida at 2:57 p.m. Pacific time. The crew is now on board the recovery vessel Megan, and the hatch is open. The next major milestone that we'll see is when the crew will actually egress or exit the spacecraft. But before that, they'll continue to, the recovery personnel rather, will continue to install that protective area around the hatch and then remove the footrests. So we're a couple minutes away from seeing the crew.
Well, we'll keep you posted on that, but that's pretty fascinating.
Wow.
We can feature something in Audio Cut of the Day. I was beginning to talk about basketball. We have SLU in the NIT, SIU Edwardsville that's in the big dance, and Mizzou plays Drake, and the Drake story is quite something. It's a Cinderella story that the nation
Cinderella
may latch
story.
On to, because they're going to talk about Drake more than Mizzou. But let's talk about Mizzou right now with my friend Chris Trevino. He's been a longtime member of the Mizzou football and basketball broadcast team in Columbia, Missouri. Gervino, how are you this afternoon?
Hey, Mark, I'm doing well. You?
I'm good. I feel like we were just chatting in December about the Mizzou bowl game, and I remember saying something like, I think this Missouri Tiger team is going to be pretty good. Now, I never really thought they'd have the season that they did up until about 3 weeks ago, and maybe that's my first question, Chris. You know, this was a team that legit looked like they could be a Final Four team. They might be able to beat any team in the country, and they really struggled in the last couple of weeks. Is it because these SEC teams figured them out a little bit? I mean, we know the competition is tough, but what would you say about the last couple of weeks heading into this weekend?
Well, I think word does get out, and obviously videotape gets out, so everything's on TV anymore within the SEC, which was a great league. I think you look at it, clearly the problem for Missouri down the stretch was its defense. They just really struggled defensively, gave up about 90 points or so on average over the last half dozen games or so. So they've really got to straighten that out here going forward. But, you know, you mentioned they've had a really good season. They've beaten some really good teams, i.e. Florida and Kansas and Alabama along the way. Of course, the Gators just came back and got them in their last game at the SEC tournament. But Florida's the hottest and perhaps the best team in the country right now. So nothing to be ashamed of. A few things to tweak, and we'll see. It's like a new beginning. I'm glad they got the win over Mississippi State in Nashville just to kind of stop the bleeding. You know, they had to grind out, really earn a victory. So I think that helped as opposed to going in cold on a losing streak.
I agree.
To the NCAA.
The one that really stings for me, Chris, is the Vanderbilt loss, because you had that game won. And, you know, so that one really gets to you. You know, you're facing good teams. But I'm with you on Thursday, because they really needed to win that game. They keep Mark Mitchell out. Let's talk about him a little bit, because, look, I don't know if you can beat Florida Friday night. They are one of the best teams, and they may win this whole damn thing. But they keep Mark Mitchell out for precautionary reasons. I love that because, you know, like you said, it's a fresh start. But what do you know about that injury? Is it just something they were trying to rest up?
Yeah, they've said all along it's a precautionary move, and I think he's going to be fine. You know, he was there with the team at the game on the bench and was up and walking around, looked fine. I certainly don't pretend to be a doctor or have the answers just on site, but they said at the time when they told us it was precautionary, Mark wanted to play, so certainly he felt he was ready and able to play. But I'm with you. Smart move. Keep him rested for the ones that really, really count now going forward.
I want to talk about the matchup with Drake, but let's just talk about the SEC and this incredible conference this year. And I was watching on Thursday night, Chris, as Coach Gates, you know, took the stage with the SEC announcing crew, and he made the plea and the case for 14 teams getting in. I don't know that that's exactly why 14 teams got in, but look, I think it was appropriate that the SEC gets 14 in, and obviously there's a couple of programs out there shaking their head, but this was an incredible conference this year.
Never seen anything like it. I've been lucky and blessed to do this for a long time, but never seen a conference this deep and this strong. And I understand now that it's 16 teams in this conference, so they're mega conferences in terms of size and the number of teams. But I can go back and remember the 1989-90 season, the 1990 Big Eight season, when you had Missouri, Kansas, and Oklahoma all ranked in the top five nationally. They took turns three consecutive weeks being number one in the country, Mizzou, KU, OU. And that was incredible, three of eight teams in the league sharing number one week after week after week. But in terms of this many teams in a national tournament, you're talking 14 of 68. It's unbelievable. And these teams are so good. It was really a pleasure to watch. I'm glad I didn't have to coach and try to win these games, but for sheer entertainment value and seeing so many great teams and future NBA stars, wow.
Yeah, well, even the Oklahoma-Kentucky game, you go back, you know, if you heard the announcers before that, it was almost like, hey, OU barely belongs in the building against Kentucky. They're going to win it all, and they bring them down to, you know, a half-second shot, and Kentucky wins, and then they don't fare very well on Sunday. So, really, I know that anything can happen, certainly moving forward, because there are a lot of talented teams, but let's talk about the Drake Bulldogs just a little bit. Here's my prediction, all right, Trevino? Take it for what it's worth, okay. And I'm always wrong. But all I said this on Monday, because I hear all this upset talk, and I know we've been talking with Frank Cusimano here about Drake and, you know, how these players came from, you know, from St. Joseph and Northwest Missouri State. So I get it, and they've got a great resume. But the Tigers, by double digits, F this upset talk. They're in the upper echelon of the SEC, and this team is in the MVC. So that's my position. What do you say?
Well, you make it sound so simple and easy. I'm sure Missouri would take that. Honestly, I think they'd just take a one-point win at this point of the game. But no, you know, I mean, a couple of things. Obviously, Drake is really good. 30-3 is extremely impressive. They've played together in a system, had a lot of success at Division II, and now, I mean, they dominated the Missouri Valley, winning the regular season and tournament title. So it's a formidable team that holds opponents to 58 points per game. And yet, of course, Missouri, coming from the powerful SEC, is favored, is the better-seeded team in the tournament, and you know, should win the game, but that doesn't mean it's automatic. We've been around long enough to see these tournaments over many years. There always are a few upsets in the lesser rounds. I think Drake's pretty good. I've seen them play. I mean, they're a capable team, certainly, not just against Missouri, against anyone. So the good news is, because they've been picked by many people already to be the Cinderella story before a ball's been put in the air, they certainly ought to have Missouri's attention and respect. They really should. And I think they will. And now the Tigers have to go out and execute. But they've got to be on their game, because I do think this is a really solid team. I've been able to see them a few times and been very impressed by Drake.
No, there's no doubt. And I'm not trying to disrespect the Missouri Valley right. Conference, but I do think that there is a different caliber of athlete in the SEC. And you know, usually, I know this isn't how it works, but typically, Chris, those big upsets come from the teams that nobody's really paying attention to. And that's when we're talking about an upset. You know, you mentioned that 88, 89, 90 period. I remember, here's an NCAA tournament story for you. I can't remember exactly what year, but I was very excited to go see Mizzou play in the NCAA tournament. And it was a Thursday-Saturday type deal. I couldn't make it on a Thursday. So we buy tickets in Indianapolis, Indiana for the second round, assuming that Mizzou's going to win this first round game against this team called Xavier that no one's ever heard of. And then we lost to Xavier. But I still went to Indianapolis, and that was the year that Indianapolis and Mark Alford won the national championship, or Indiana, rather. It was nice to see a national champion come through the Hoosier Dome. But you remember that. We lose to all these teams, right?
That was 1987,
yeah.
Mizzou against Xavier, Indianapolis, the first game of the entire tournament, 11 a.m. start. They had a great guard named Byron Larkin and a forward named Tyrone Hill, who played for years in the NBA. They beat Missouri, and the Tigers were the first team eliminated from the 1987 NCAA tournament in downtown Indianapolis.
Look at the history there, and then the history goes on from there with Northern Iowa and Norfolk State and all these things. But I'm thinking we're going to crack it into the Sweet 16. I'm thinking this team's going to be who they were a few weeks ago. Caleb Grill is going to have all this family there in Wichita. Gervino, you have a great time, and I think you're going into the second weekend. I'm going with that. I'm going to stay confident here.
I love it. The calendar is clear, so let's do it.
All right, Chris, take care. Have a good time. We have a rescue going on of these astronauts live. We may use that for audio cut of the day, but that's coming up next. We have been dipping into NASA TV. Sue, it's been really fun to see these astronauts pulled out of this capsule from SpaceX on the International Space Station for
really
9 months
fun.
Longer than they should have been. But let me just use this for audio cut of the day from NASA TV, as they have brought most of the astronauts out of the capsule. It landed about an hour ago. It splashed into the ocean.
Our live coverage of their return. The Crew 9 mission began a little differently than usual since Butch Wilmore and...
All right, as this wraps up here...
Oh, well, Brett's going to take it.
Man.
He's going to take it because he's about to wrap up his show. But I wanted to use that because it was so cool, you know, seeing and hearing what has happened over the course of the last hour. But unfortunately, they didn't give me the best audio cut of the day. So we'll have something for tomorrow. You know, our local space expert, Mac Bradley, is fantastic on this stuff. And I have so many questions about the adjustment. I mean, you got smiles on the faces of these astronauts, but they can't really get up and walk right now.
Right.
So it's pretty crazy. Sue, have a great night.
You too.
We'll talk at 3 tomorrow.